Okay. I think this is my fourth interview. I'm not clear. My name is Anna Ramirez. I am 53 years old. That's the part that I hate saying. Today is June 6th, 2020, and I'm recording this in my studio in New Haven, Connecticut. Not in the Airstream studio, but in my art studio, which is also my office because the Airstream is getting tuned up this week. And I am speaking with my wonderful dear friend and fellow artist, Danielle Schmidt. Danielle, welcome and good morning.
Well, thank you. I am Danielle Schmidt. I am located in Northford, Connecticut. I am 34 years old for less than a month, and I'm sitting on my living room couch because that's the comfortable place for me right now.
We already went into that before the interview, so I think we'll skip over that. Well, I want to say that I chose you. I wanted to honor your story for a number of reasons. Because this series is about women during COVID, I wanted to have an artist that I respected and that inspired me. And since we have known each other, your work has touched me, and I bought your work. I have three of your paintings, right? The Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Greta, and I forget the other one. It's a Latina
Emma
run.
Gonzalez.
Yeah. Okay. And I've been with you in Middletown, one of your showings. And every time we get together, I just feel super connected and inspired by you. And I really want to know how you're doing during COVID. So, without further ado, what was the questions that you chose?
I think I chose how do you feel about the pandemic and what it was like for you, because those two go hand in hand for me. Should I just start answering that?
We're just talking,
Oh
remember?
yeah. In the beginning of the pandemic, it was like March. We were supposed to hang out.
Exact. I threw my birthday party, the
Right.
annual Ramirez Ruth G Bader Ginsburg party, and you couldn't make it.
Yeah, I had like a lot of things, and it was also they were doing some like family thing, and I never really see my family, my extended family that much. So I was like, oh, I really want to do the family thing. And then we, heard from the CDC, like you should really limit in-person interactions. And I was like, well, if we're gonna go out, like if we're not gonna be able to, hang out with anyone, I guess I'll hang out with my family, like last call.
Actually, I'm just going to make a brief comment. So we had, you know, that we had the party despite the CDC, and the women that played at my party, we had the music outside in the backyard.
Okay.
And I think I had invited maybe 50 women, and about 15 showed up. And it was great, but you were there in spirit. So, you know,
It was, yeah.
those beautiful stickers that you mailed me, which I have still.
In the beginning, there was a lot of fear. I also had been unemployed since January 21st. So I had just had a couple of job interviews. And, because the state basically shut down, I was no longer able to follow through on those job interviews. A lot of the agencies I had been working with to try to get a job were just kind of like, they just disappeared. Like they were still working, but there were like pretty much remote jobs, and I didn't have the resources to work remotely per se because I just left a 10-year-ish career in teaching, and I wanted to pursue other types of work because teaching just was too much for me, mentally, physically, everything, financially.
Me how you, because I know both of us felt the same way about teaching and energy.
And sort of being the creative introvert that loves kids but couldn't deal with the energy it takes to be in a classroom situation all day.
Yeah.
My own, I guess what's the word? Just, I don't know. I can't deal with structures anymore, and I can't deal with hierarchy anymore. So I have to be on my own. But anyway, we digress. So where are you pivoting to after teaching?
So I wasn't sure. I thought like maybe I was going to be like an administrative assistant or something. So I actually did get a position last summer that was basically an administrative assistant for an in-home care, not like a facility, but like a organization that gets people in homes to help people that can't do all of their needs for themselves. And I realized that I didn't really like answering the phone.
College grad. Anyway.
Like, so I finished the position. I did, they hired someone else full time that wasn't me. That they just said they wanted someone with more experience, and I'm like, that's cool because I'm not sure how long I could have stayed there. And then I got later on, like a few, like a couple months went by. I had some surgery, and then I was recovering from that. And a different temp agency called, and they're like, this construction company is just looking to hire someone to help them with some basic office stuff. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. And so I was working there from in the winter, like November to the middle of January. And I was do I never had to answer the phone. In fact, I was just doing all their like accounting tasks, and I did have to make some outbound calls to request stuff like certificate of insurance or like here's your W-9 form or stuff like that. But like they like made it so that I never had to answer the phone. I did a lot of organizational tasks for them. I even just like organize their whole basement for them, like just stuff, like just tasks. And
That job,
huh?
did you lose the job during COVID, or what happened?
They basically had a slow time. So it's a construction business, and in the winter, they basically don't have many construction jobs. They don't have many customers. And so they actually do have to lay off a number of staff in the winter just because there's just no work for them. And that's a common thing in construction. If you work in construction, you will likely have like December, January, or longer. If you're like a laborer, you will have from like December to April, like no work. But if you're working the office, it might be like January, February, or even like a smaller amount, but you'll still get laid off.
Okay. So in March, you were unemployed by when COVID hit, I guess. I'm trying to understand, were you employed and then, like many of us, just not employed?
Oh no, I was unemployed since January 21st. So I had had already 6 weeks of unemployment before everyone else was suddenly unemployed.
Okay, so then what happened?
So I was actually had applied to work for the census, and they, I didn't hear anything, didn't hear anything, didn't hear anything. And then I want to say, like, the beginning of April, they're like, oh, hey, you were hired. Why don't you get your fingerprints done? I'm like, okay. And I set up an appointment. And then they were like, oh, we're actually closing the offices. The pandemic's like really bad. Catch you later.
Door shut. Okay.
And I was like, oh man, this is really bad. Like, and so I saw on the unemployment for Connecticut, they basically said, like, if you are not working right now because of COVID-19, you can apply for unemployment. And I was like, well, I guess I would be working for the census right now if I was not, if the offices were open. So I applied. And I actually got unemployment, not because of the census job, but because I had left a part-time teaching position to take on full-time work in a different field.
Okay.
And it counted, and I was able to start receiving unemployment for the time I had worked as a teacher and the time I worked as the administrative assistant over the summer. They took into account all that time period, and that's how they generated my unemployment income. But I happened to jump into unemployment at the right time, because the government was like, hey, here's an extra $600 a week just for surviving COVID-19 during the pandemic. And it was, you know, I was like, what? And so I was actually able to pay off this credit card I had accrued from being unemployed for so long. And, you know, sort of, I wasn't panic buying that much, but I mean, I was a little bit, because I would go to the grocery store and I couldn't find the things that I needed to buy. So I was buying online.
Okay. So what else during COVID financially have you had to pivot or suffer from or get adjusted to? So you're able to collect $600 a week. Have you, I think you said you were doing, were you doing smaller jobs or no? Were you able to find anything?
Well, so at the end of April, the construction company called me back and they were like, we need you back, like stat. And I was like, oh, okay. You want me to do something different? And they're like, well, kind of, yeah. And we're going to pay you like more money to come back. And so I'm like, oh, well, what are you going to pay me? And they're like, well, I'll talk to the owner and we'll see. And they said, well, we'll pay you $17.50 an hour. And I'm like, eh, it's a stepping stone. And they're like, and we're going to like train you for accounts payable, because like we need the, like, basically they have two employees that are in their 70s and they made them work from home, but they're much less efficient doing their jobs when they're working from home. Cause it's like chaotic, you know, making your like living room or your dining room or your bed into an office. It's just like, you know, and they're like, it's harder to keep track of. They needed me to take on some of those roles of the organization in the office, plus the role I was already doing when I was there. And they have a lot more sales now, because they not only are, you know, like a construction company labor, but they also sell stone and gravel and sand and supplies for like gardens and that kind of thing, topsoil.
These companies are doing really well right now because people are redoing their homes. They've got time to look and fix up those, you know, broken this, broken that. So they're probably doing quite well, right?
They are doing well, to my knowledge. They also qualified for the PPP loan, so that's also why they could pay me probably at a higher rate, because like they're getting payroll from the government to pay for payroll. So it actually worked out in my favor.
Okay. So that's where you're at currently. That's what you're doing. You're working from home, kind of in an accounts payable office.
I'm not working from home. I go into the office every day.
Like that.
Yeah. And
interesting.
I actually
said they've gotten used to working at home and they do not ever see themselves going back into the office. I mean, even my husband, who works at, you know, Lockheed Martin, has set himself up a little office upstairs. And he's like, you know, a lot of people can't imagine going back into work. They've pivoted. I mean, how are you doing this? Do you like that?
I don't work from home.
Right. Do you like going into the office?
Yes. Most of the time, most of my coworkers are understanding. We have different like corners of the office. There's one coworker though, who's in her 70s. She came back to the office like part-time, and I really had to like let her know, like, please don't be on top of me. You have to stand over there when you're talking to me, because not only for her, I mean, for her sake, she's like, what, 72 years old. Like I could be carrying something. See, the thing is that the company is run by family and almost everyone that works there is related. So they're kind of like used to like a close network, and so the older people just don't get it that you're supposed to follow COVID-19 guidelines.
Are you wearing a mask every day?
No. I do wear gloves to count cash, though.
Excellent. 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 So what else? What else? So work is good. You've got work. What else has shifted for you during COVID? Or what are some things as an artist? We haven't talked about that.
Yeah. So while I was unemployed back in March, I was kind of in this like weird spot because in February, the end of February, I just had a very successful show, which you came to in Middletown. And I made a lot of new contacts. I sold a lot of work, you know, the most amount of work I've ever sold in any given time period.
Great.
And,
What is the name of the coffee shop in Middletown?
Purgatory.
Love that coffee shop. Purgatory. So wonderful. Anyway, go ahead. Shout out.
So I had a really successful show, and then when I found out that you know, the pandemic hit, I was like, oh no, I can't have any more in-person shows. In-person shows is like where I make the connections with people. It's where I actually sell things because I can actually talk to people about the work, not necessarily just have these like passive transactions on Instagram or whatever. I also, you know, I was buying the packaging materials from Amazon, and Amazon made some statement like, we are so overwhelmed with shipping right now, we are only going to ship like essentials. And I'm like, so you're basically saying that the packaging that I would be purchasing from you for my artwork is not essential, and that makes me not essential, doesn't it?
Interesting. So you did.
I sort of like internalize this story that, oh my God, my art business is going to suffer a bit from this because internally I don't feel like it art is worth it, because I thought a bunch of people would be in the same position as me where they were unemployed, they didn't have extra income to spend on art.
So you did not get the supplies that you needed to continue, or what happened?
You know, it's weird because I had just spent a bunch of money on marketing materials. I not only got those stickers, but I also got a bag. I got new business cards. I got like all this stuff for in-person kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, we got to change the plan here. And with the women's series, what I traditionally do is I create, you know, five or six paintings in, you know, a month, right? And then I go ahead and bring them to the printer, and she scans them and cleans them up, and I purchase print from her, like a saleable item on my website. And I had to stop that pattern because of a lot of reasons. Like, I couldn't meet up with the printer, you know, like because of COVID-19, we're not supposed to have face-to-face interaction. So I wouldn't be able to bring her my to scan. And, you know, it just, the only thing I can do now is order reprints from her and have them ship them to me if I needed them.
Okay. So, where does that leave you as an artist? I mean, did that force you to do other things, or because you're always being creative? I mean, whenever one of the things that I loved about you was your Instagram stories. I mean, you were consistently on there with your music. You were on there showing your makeup. You were on there, and I loved that. That was really, really inspiring. So, did you just decide, Jen, I'm going to just do what I need to do? What did you, how did you do that?
Well, so I really wanted to pause the women's series for a while because it's just, it turns into this like constant process, and like people are like, oh, I want you to do this person or I want you to do that person. And I'm like, okay, that's great. But you know, it is very time consuming, and it does require a lot of focus. And after a long day of regular work, I don't get as much accomplished as quickly. So I was like, I was looking for a break from the women's series, and that was like the perfect reason. Like, oh well, I can't get packaging materials, and I can't meet up with my printer. So why continue that right now?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Tell us, I noticed you're not doing more videos music wise and makeup wise. Is that just, you've kind of run out of gas with those, or you're getting?
No, it's just because my job, I have to get up at 4:50 in the morning and I got to leave the house by like around 6 a.m. So to get to work on time. So I'm basically on this work from like 4:50 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. But it still takes me another like 35 minutes to get home. So I'm really just like, my body is slowly adjusting to this really early schedule. I still put makeup on in the morning, but not very much. I really have no time. I mean, I actually paid for a meal service to provide me with dinners and some breakfast that I can warm up in the microwave, because I'm literally like so stretched with my time, you know?
Balancing our time and balancing our lives is always tricky, but particularly during this time, right?
Right. So it's like, and like, you know, I have a very sort of specialized diet. There's a lot of foods that I can't eat. And, you know, I've been making my own food, but it does take a lot of time. And, you know, it's, and the reason why I got the meal service is so that I could still do some creative stuff after work, like at least like an hour of whatever it is, like drawing, music, working on my website, which is doesn't feel like creativity, but it is necessary to get those sales going.
Yeah. A couple of things about creativity. I mean, I know most of our friends who are creatives and artists are joining groups. You know, I think Bria has a group. Lily has continued to come over once a week, and we sit at my big dining room table. And we've been working on a curriculum for women memoirs using mixed media art, which we'd like to bring out, you know, sometime in the fall or what have you not. But I find that being creative every day in some way is really therapeutic, right?
Yeah. So like in the morning when I'm putting on my makeup, I actually just got a couple of palettes from this new brand called Aether Beauty. And it's like all like eco-sustainable, and they like crush up like gemstones to make the eye palettes. It's just phenomenal stuff. And so I just start the day and I take my time. Even if the clock is like, hello, you have to leave, I'm like, no, I got to put on my like eye makeup. That's like my thing. Like it's part of my ritual in the morning.
Say too that, you know, moving to the East Coast from California, one of the things that struck me was like East Coast women don't wear a lot of makeup. And so when I ran into you, you had this whole thing with makeup. I was like, oh my God, I've met somebody who knows how to do makeup. And I think we talked about this, right? Like the fact
that
I really wanted to know how to do makeup really well, right? But I just, too nerdy, just didn't get to it. But I'm always attracted to people who put the time and the effort into that, and it really is like painting. I mean, you are a painter, right? And I think you do such a beautiful job. So I still want to get point to like train me or teach me.
That's okay.
But anyway,
you wanted me to talk about my art that I started working on during the pandemic, but had to kind of put a pause on because I started working at the construction company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple of the things that I worked on after I paused the Inspirational Women series is I was thinking like, what are some things that I really want to learn and explore and creatively? And the answer is always spiritual stuff. And, the first thing that I wanted to do that I feel like I could learn really quickly was identification and meaning of the Elder Futhark, which is the Norse runes. And because I had a book of this tarot, the very first tarot deck that I purchased, well, actually the second, but the first one I understood, In the book, the card, the Hangman, they showed Odin as their inspiration for the Hangman card. And they had all the Elder Futhark in the background, like part of on a window in the card image. And I was like, boy, I wish I knew how to read that. And and then, like, you know, 8-9 years later, the pandemic hits and we got all the time on our hands. So I ended up, you know, designing these very simple, quick sort of sketches using like Prismacolor markers and just like regular ink pens. And I illustrated my version of the Elder Futhark in a week.
Those are amazing. Honestly, we need to shout your where people can find those if they're interested in them. I thought they were stunning. And for you to learn another language during this time, my mind was like, oh my gosh. And it was just amazing what you produced.
Well, that's going to eventually be a zine, because if you are casting runes, you are going to want to have a handy book available to help you remind you of what it means. Like, even though I illustrated it and my subconscious brain knows the meaning, my conscious brain, like before a coffee, is like, wait, which one is that again?
So you are going to put these into a zine and maybe make them for sale?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. All right. Put me on the list, of course.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be smaller size than the Teenage Activist scene, but it'll still be color.
Wonderful. Any others that you've learned or put out there?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, did you learn that language, and were you still delving deep into that, or have you moved on to another?
I moved on. So I moved on into something else very spiritual that I was very interested in at the same time, which is the Kabbalistic Tree of Life.
Oh, yes. The Kabbalah. Mm.
Now, there's a lot of different Kabbalistic schools of thought. Like there's the Kabbalah with a K, which is like the Jewish mysticism one, and they break down the Hebrew and they reread the Bible according to the way the letters are in Hebrew, and it's like a lot of new meaning. Mm-hmm. And things aren't as literal as they seem, and that's really super fascinating, but that was more in depth than I could manage.
Okay.
I don't read Hebrew. I was like, oh, either we can learn Hebrew or keep going with this Kabbalah thing. I'm like, No, not the Hebrew. No, I already learned the Elder Futhark last week. No. So there's also a Kabbalistic school that begins with the letter Q. And they take their tradition from like the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and some more like occultism related groups. And what they've done is they've associated the major arcana of the tarot with the different paths of the Kabbalah. And because I already understand the tarot, I was like, well, let's just like use that knowledge, like internalize that knowledge and sort of like channel what that means in a Kabbalistic sense through illustration.
See, this is what I mean when like I learn so much from you guys and I'm just like, having to have you stop and repeat what you just said, because it's like, I gotta process all that. You know, that language is something that I haven't looked at in a while. I mean, the language of theology, as you well know, has its own right language, but the language of the Kabbalah is totally different. So, wow, we could do a whole new interview on that.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not a Kabbalistic scholar or anything. I just learn really through like images and like base words. So like this book that Alex actually I don't know if he gave it to me or if he's just lending it to me for the next 10 years, but it's a book that he got when he was in high school. That's one of the things that makes our relationship sort of strong, is we both have an interest in a lot of different religions and that kind of thing. So he had this book and it explains what the different spheres mean and tries to, of the Kabbalah, the 10 spheres, and like what you sort of meditate on when you're thinking about that sphere, and what it really means. I mean, it doesn't really explain very much in a pictorial sense. And that's why I wanted to try to illustrate it in a pictorial sense, because there's not a lot of information on that. So there's like not a lot of, I would say not a lot of people who've maybe done that. I mean, there are, but there aren't. It's not like, not like drawing Santa Claus.
Got it. Got it. All right. With 9 minutes left to our interview, what do you want, not to cut off short, but what do you want to, what will you remember the most about this time, do you think? Or what's kind of on your mind right now about what you've been through? We've been through 3 months of COVID right now, I guess. And who knows how much longer we'll be living through this. What are kind of your, I guess, thoughts or ruminations as we wrap up a little?
Oh man, it's an incredible time to be alive. you know, I not only am I now like financially stable because of the pandemic, but I'm also, you know, trying to stay healthy, trying to still be creative, but also I'm confronting the racial bias in my family at the same time. So there's a lot going on. I'm trying to educate people. I'm trying to be creative. I'm trying to keep my own health and happiness.
This is a lot. So you're doing what the rest of us are doing, I suppose. And it just takes a lot of energy and one baby step at a time, especially as we confront family, right?
You know, you saw on my page, my fine art business page on Facebook, how I basically expressed solidarity with everyone and said, we need to protect each other through this time. And one of my family members started like basically agreeing with police brutality. And it ensued into a very long, trying conversation via Facebook comments.
Yeesh. Facebook's never good for that. Usually, I either don't read comments or I try not to get into comments. I think comments sometimes can be good, but most of the time, sometimes they take on a new life of their own, which may be better to have off Facebook, right?
Right. But I mean, it was actually, I think it was better to have a record of it, because
I was proud of you. It was good. I thought that was great that you stood up to the older generation. God bless them. They have come through a different period with different expectations and a whole different source of education than us, right?
Right.
And in 20 years, we're going to be their age, and people who are younger are going to be like, who are those old women who, you know, are crazy? They don't know what's going on. And we probably won't, because we come out of a particular. Fine. Okay. That's never happened to me before, where somebody's called me during an interview. All right. We have 6 minutes left.
Okay.
This has been an amazing conversation. Will you hang on after I press stop recording so we can wrap up a bit?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for your sharing your wisdom with me today and for sharing your story, a little bit of your story during COVID. You're in the Library of Congress forever now, girlfriend.
Awesome. I love to hear that.
All right. Hold on there. Have a good day.
Thanks. To everyone else as well.
All right. Okay.